Welcome to another episode of Words and Wine, where I speak about business, books, and big questions, and drink wine to ease my nerves. I'm Lauren Kress. Hi guys, welcome back to another episode of Words and Wine, where I talk about business, books, and big questions. As I promised last week, tonight I'm going to be talking about value proposition and business personality. Now, these two things are very important for starting to think about how you're going to tell the story of your business to your prospective customers. So last week, if you remember, we talked about vision. So what contribution are you going to make to the world? Then we talked about internal steering. So your mission and your values. What do we need to do as a business to achieve our vision? And how do we need to behave? So now this week, what we're talking about is sort of the two things that support that. Value proposition is about the promise of value that you will deliver on, and your personality, your brand personality, or your business personality is about how you will be perceived by your potential customers. Now, what I'm going to be sharing with you tonight is three different methods for starting to put this together. I find that I actually use all three at different times, depending on how I'm trying to think about my business. Just before I get into that, I did want to really quickly share a book that I'm reading this week that I will be discussing in one of my upcoming episodes, which is this one. It's another Brené Brown book. It's called Braving the Wilderness. And if you remember a few episodes ago, actually it was way back in episode one, I was talking about sort of this idea that, you know, the top regret of the dying is that they wish they would have led a life that they wanted to live, not the life that they thought that others wanted them to. And what this book is about is it's about true belonging. It's about finding a way to stand on your own two feet as your own person, living the life you want to live, and how that actually relates to belonging in the wider community. So I definitely highly recommend reading this book. And as I said, once I finish it, I will be reviewing it and I'll be sharing it with you guys. Let's jump into tonight's episode, which is going to be a double episode just because there is so much to cover. So your value proposition is about the creation of value that you will deliver on, which we've talked about. It must be driven by results, which is a concept that we have talked about before in episode three when we were talking about getting to know your audience. So, and it needs to really speak to the hearts and minds of your audience. So really looking at not just the rational reasons for why someone might want to work with you, but also more the emotional reasons. What feeling are they going to get by having the value that you are delivering? So by following through with actually purchasing your solution. You're really also with your value proposition, you need to look at how your competitors create value for your target audience. So that's really key. And actually this week, I will be doing a separate whiteboard session that will show you how to do a really quick competitor SWOT analysis, which is really, really helpful as you start to define your value proposition as well. The other thing that you really need to understand is you won't get it totally right the first time, but you have to start somewhere. So it's okay if you're not totally sure on what your solution is. It's a starting point that then we will continue to work on. Now, with personality, your business personality is about the characteristics and qualities that define you. It articulates how you endeavor to be perceived by others and how you will meet their needs. So again, this is what really helps to tell the story of your values, and it helps to portray the character of your business. So I like to think about it the same way that we would think about fiction or about a hero's journey. And one of the tools that I'm going to share with you tonight is about brand archetypes and really thinking about the character of your business in terms of 12 archetypes that really meet our human universal drivers and motivations. So on that note, Drives and Motivations. I took this actually from the book that I always reference in basically all of my episodes, which is The Personal MBA. Great book by Josh Kaufman. I have constantly said that I highly recommend reading it. But he shares these core human drivers in his first section about creating value. So the first of the four of the core human drivers is to acquire. This can be acquiring a physical good, or it can be acquiring something that is intangible. So an example of something that is perhaps intangible is the acquisition of power or the acquisition of confidence. On the other hand, something like acquiring of food is an example of something that is physical, the acquiring of a mobile phone, the acquiring of a computer. So it can be both. Another core human drive is to bond or to belong. So actually, interestingly enough, what I was sort of talking about with the Brené Brown book just earlier is that we all have this drive to have relationships with other people. That is a core human driver that is innate within all of us. The third one is to learn. So the acquisition of knowledge in a way, but also that is a driver in of itself. And then you have to defend or to protect. So whether it's for ourselves or for a family member, friends, people that we care about, defending our property, this is about the driver that's in relation to risk. So sort of we like to have a certain amount of stability in our lives, and we don't want to take on these sort of insurmountable risks that are going to put us in danger. The other core human drive, which is very, very important for marketing, is to feel. So this is about sort of the emotional connection. And this is what I'm saying about sort of speaking to the hearts as well as the minds of your customers, is that this is a drive that is very much innate within all of us. It is a human universal motivation that we want to feel, and we want to feel good things. So we want to move from pain to pleasure. And so when we talk about drivers and motivations, it's really, really important that we always keep that in mind, that no matter what it is that we are targeting, that we are always trying to move our customers from a situation of pain to feeling good, to a feeling of pleasure. So the first approach, or the first tool I'm going to talk about, is one that I've talked about before, which is the buyer persona, or you can just call it the persona. So building out a persona, I like to do it in a way that really, really focuses on mindset and motivation over demographics. Now, you can build demographic profiles as well as what I call psychographic profiles. But I think for a lot of small businesses starting out, when you don't know that much about your audience yet, it's really, really key that we start right from the beginning thinking about the situation that our customers are in, and that is mindset. So I'm sharing some slides tonight. So I'm talking actually, the example that I'm going to show you is in relation to myself. So how I would start thinking about myself as a consultant and as someone who's wanting to work more as a business coach. I'm going to think about a persona of someone who might be in need of my services. So I've used the example of Gemma, the frustrated creative. So first I look at the mindset and pain points. So I've written sort of a few sentences about who I think Gemma is and what she's feeling right now. What is her situation? So Gemma is sick of slogging it away at her 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. job, helping someone else make money on her talents. She's unsure of whether she has what it takes to be a business founder or an entrepreneur. She's confident in her creative skill set, but doesn't know where to begin when it comes to setting up a business, and is worried about the risks involved. Will she be able to make money out on her own? How should she prepare? Now, this mindset and talking about some of these pain points helps me to think about those drivers and motivations that I just mentioned. So, drivers and motivations. Gemma wants to acquire the confidence and learn the skills she needs in order to become a business founder so that she can feel the thrill, excitement, and pleasure of running her own show whilst knowing she has defended herself from taking on an unmanageable amount of risk. So you can see there that we've got three core motivations that we're really tapping into. And that's really, really key to knowing that you're on the right track. You need to start using that language to see, okay, how am I meeting these needs? And these needs are within all of us. So you know that there are people out there who are going to find your value proposition appealing. So I also like to use a hypothesis, and this is something that I guess I kind of have because I'm someone who started off studying science, so I very much like a sort of scientific approach. I like being able to have something that I can test and I can learn from. And a book that I would recommend to help you understand this concept a little bit more is this one, which is The Lean Startup by Eric Ries. Fantastic book. I have to be honest, I haven't actually gotten through the whole thing because I found that a lot of the concepts were actually something that I was relatively familiar with anyway, but I definitely recommend it for people, especially if you don't have that scientific background of how to sort of set up an experiment. The Lean Startup is a really, really good way to understand how you can set up experiments and how you can sort of iterate your product or your service based on the feedback that you're getting as you get to know your audience better. So, my hypothesis is that Gemma will value educational courses and resources that take her through the basics of how to start a business. And this is how I can start to sort of build my value proposition. Now, it might change, but it gives me sort of like a basic idea. So again, I've just summarized the primary personal drivers there: acquire confidence, learn business skills, feel excited about her work and enjoy the entrepreneurial lifestyle, and defend herself from too much risk. Now, what you would then do is you would probably build out a couple more, because Gemma is not necessarily the only person or the persona that I'm targeting. It might not just be creatives. It may also be top tier executives that are looking to move out in onto their own. And they would probably be motivated by different things that Gemma would not be motivated by. So I like to have about three different personas of people that are sort of quite different in terms of their needs, so that I can target different people in different ways. So the value proposition based on this persona, sort of like a mark one, would be something like this. We provide content, courses, and coaching to help you learn the skills you need to start a business. Now, again, this is for a type of the type of persona who's someone who's just starting out, who doesn't know that much about business. But as I said, if I was trying to target someone who did know more, then I would want to change my value proposition for that particular customer. And you can do that. So you can have two or three different value propositions that are aimed towards your different target market. So you may have your primary target market, but then you will also have your sort of like secondary target market. So other people that you can, that may actually find what you have to offer valuable. Okay, the second approach is what I've called the empathy approach. So the empathy approach, it's also something that I did talk about in episode 3, which was about getting to know your audience, which is about this idea of an empathy statement. So I've sort of put this out into a table that walks through, and sort of it shows you how value proposition is sandwiched in between your empathy statement and the results that you give your customers. So the empathy statement is, in a similar way to what we were talking about in the persona, it's sort of like the mindset, but it's aiming to just get like, you know, one to two sentences out about Gemma's situation. So what is the situation Gemma is in right now? Then we have the value proposition, result, feeling, and agreement, and I'll walk through each one of those as we go. So the empathy statement, what is the situation Gemma is in right now? Okay, so this is what I've kind of written about Gemma. I'm frustrated in my current 9-to-5 role making money for someone else. I'd love to start my own agency, but I don't know if I really have what it takes, and I have no idea where to start. So it just gives us a really good snapshot of how we could talk. It's almost like if we were face to face with her, we would know what to say. But when we're trying to think about how to tell our story online, or how to tell our story when we're not face to face with that customer, having these tools to kind of help us picture them is really, really useful for building out our business story. So the second thing is the solution. So it's your value proposition. What does Gemma need that I or that we provide? So what I've written here is the same thing that I kind of came to in when I was using that other persona tool, which is we provide content, courses and coaching to help you learn the skills you need to start a business. And you can really see how that answers the empathy statement, which is what it needs to do. So you've got the situation that Gemma is in, and then we've got the solution for Gemma. Okay, the result. What is the outcome result of delivering this value for that customer? So what is that customer going to get from the solution, the value proposition that you are providing? So in this case, I've said, as a result, you will be able to build a business based on what you desire out of your life. And then I've put something else in there, which is really, really important, which is the proof of results. So then I've said, read testimonials from our past clients on how working with us to start and grow their business changed their lives for the better. So it's no use me kind of just saying, oh yeah, look at the results we provide. What's much better is to have a customer say that. And that's something that has been shown to really, really resonate with customers a lot better. And this is why people trust user-generated content more, why people like to read reviews rather than listen to a marketer talk about what the business is about. And also, again, why I had recommended that book called Absolute Value by Itama Simonson and Emmanuel Rosen. So I definitely recommend checking that out to understand more about how to articulate the results that you will provide to your customers. Okay, another key part of this is feeling. And in a way, we had touched on this in the persona approach as well. This is just a different framework for tapping into how that customer is going to feel as a result of you helping them with their pain points. So in this case, I've said you will feel confident in your ability to start a business, enjoy the thrill and excitement of being your own boss, and be empowered by taking your work and life into your own hands. Now, this again, it's about speaking to the hearts. We've talked about the rational reason, which is in the results. Now we're talking about how you're going to feel. And there's actually a lot of evidence to show that this is what resonates with customers a lot more as well, especially with female customers. So Amanda Stevenson actually recently did a talk about this, saying that there's a lot of research that's come out recently showing that the way you market to women is sort of different to, in general, how you market towards men. Now, I'm someone who, as a feminist, is always a bit like, oh, like, you know, let's not sort of just talk about averages. But I think that it is really important to be aware that you can't just market to people at a rational level. You need to also speak to how they are going to feel as a result of investing with you, how they're going to feel from getting that value out of your solution, out of your value promise or your value proposition. Okay, and the final bit is actually this really other important component that doesn't come across so much in the persona approach. And that's why I'm sharing this approach with you as well. So this is about what does the customer need to acknowledge and agree to? Now, this is really important for getting people across the line. So a lot of marketers are quite good at getting people engaged and interested in something, in a product or service, but in actually getting them to agree, that's a bit harder. So that's what this is about. So in this case, I've asked questions, and I think this is a really good way to do it. So I always imagine when I'm writing this stuff, I think, how would it sit on my website? How would this story be told if I put this up on a page? Because you don't have very long to tell people about what you do if they've clicked onto your website. So I like to think of it as sort of like a checkbox that people can kind of go, yep, these are the things that apply to me. So I've given three examples here of things that I would want customers to agree to in order to get them across the line into working with me. One, are you fed up with your current work situation and ready to prepare for change? Yes? Good. Okay, that's one thing that they can agree to. Two, are you able to commit your time to learning a new set of skills that will prepare you for starting a business? Again, something that they can say yes to. Three, are you willing to be honest, patient, and vulnerable about your strengths and weaknesses? And this is also where I start to try to manage customers' expectations. So I don't want to have clients that are going to think, oh, this is super easy, like this won't take a lot of time, it won't be hard for me. I want people who are really committed to actually following through with this, because if you don't have clients that are coming to you that really need your services and are ready for them, then they're problem clients. You need people who are going to be ready to say, yep, I'm ready for this, and want to be a part of the solution and not part of the problem, especially in like a service industry. So this is a really, really good way of painting the picture of sort of like I said, of what you would want to put on your website, how you start to tell the story of what your business does in terms of its value proposition. But it really does need to be sandwiched between that. What is that situation of that customer? Where are they at? What are they thinking? What is their mindset? And the results that they want to get. Your solution is in between those two things. And I think this is a really, really good way of kind of helping ourselves to start articulate that and start thinking about how our business sits in the context of our audience and our audience needs. Okay, so the third approach is the archetype approach. Now, the archetype approach is something that I would recommend doing, especially for the personality part of your business. As you start to try to talk about yourself, you need to have an idea of what the character is of your business. So we talked about values in our last episode, and values are really, really important because values help to guide us in how we make decisions about what we're willing to stand for as a company owner and what we want our employees to stand for. But how we tell the story about that and how we sort of flesh this out, I think the archetypes really, really help us do that. Now, story is a really, really important concept to understand, and I will be sharing some insights about this again later on in the series, but I do want to just really quickly mention a book that I think would be very helpful for helping you understand the importance of story and how it resonates with us as human beings. So the book I recommend is this one, which is Creativity, Inc. And it's by Ed Catmull. Ed Catmull is the president of Pixar Animation and Disney Animation. He actually was one of the sort of founders of Pixar way back when. So really, really interesting guy to listen to. And obviously Pixar putting, you know, sort of story as something that is so key to their business. It is just a great book with great insights in terms of how important story is. Now, I'm going to whiz through this relatively quickly, but I've got an absolutely fantastic resource I recommend on sparkle.com, and this is actually where I took some of the information from as well, so I'll share that below, but it just gives you a really, really nice understanding of how each of the archetypes meet the key drivers and motivations we were talking about before. All of them tap into that cornerstone motivation of moving from pleasure to pain, which is that fifth sort of core human desire of to feel. And I've sort of just matched these up with each of the four core human drives as well. So to acquire relates to the magician, the rebel, and the hero. I'll talk about these a little bit more, but just to show you how each of these archetypes meet those motivations. To bond, so the jester, the lover, and the regular gal or the regular guy. To learn, the innocent, the explorer, and the sage. And to defend is the nurturer, the creator, and the ruler. So when you look at each of these archetypes, have a think about how you want to represent your business and how each of these archetypes fit in with your values as well. So to acquire, first, as we said before, acquisition can be something that is intangible or tangible. A really good example of the magician would be someone like Airbnb, right? Because Airbnb allows you to travel somewhere new, to meet the locals, and to discover something about the world. There's another archetype that also fits Airbnb quite well, but I think the magician is one of them because it's sort of like through this change, through this journey, we acquire knowledge. The rebel promises revolution. So the rebel would be, I think, someone like Red Bull is a really good example of the rebel. Also, Lynx is quite a good example of revolution. So it's sort of like the edgy ads that show that, you know, if you do something different and you be yourself, then you can acquire sort of like this, you know, this revolutionary lifestyle or this revolutionary change. The hero promises triumph. So the hero, Energizer is a really good example of the hero. And the hero is really about the best product. So that one is very much more like about tangible goods, although it can be intangible as well. So we think like, I want the best product. A hero brand really appeals to that kind of drive, that drive to have the best, the drive to acquire the best. That's sort of what the hero brand really speaks to. And these brand archetypes, you can be more than one type of brand archetype. So it's not like you have to pick and choose only one. It just helps you to articulate how you want to appeal to those drives. Okay, so to bond or to form relationships, we have the jester. So the jester promises entertainment, but it promises entertainment in a way that it sort of allows for connection. So that humor and that, you know, so I always think of like Hamish and Andy are a great example of the jester. People who you really feel like you can connect with in some way. They're also a really good example of sort of like a brand that appeals also to the regular gal or the regular guy who promises belonging. So you feel very welcomed by a brand like that. You really feel like you can be a part of, you know, you could sit in the lounge room and have a conversation with them. So that's something that I think is really, really, you know, that really highlights how we feel connected. The lover is another one. So the lover promises passion. So brands like Vogue, brands like Estee Lauder, L'Oreal, they really appeal to sensation and to feeling good and to feeling like you've got other people around you who are passionate about life and beauty. And they're very much about sort of like romance as well. So that's why they're called the lover, I guess. Okay, to learn. So learning is something that the innocent, the explorer, and the sage speak to really well. They all kind of come at learning from a different angle. So the innocent promises simplicity, while the explorer promises freedom. And the explorer is also something that Airbnb speaks to quite well. So I would say that Airbnb are the explorer and the magician. And you often see those two together, actually, if you look at brands. They'll often put the explorer and the magician together because one promises freedom, the other promises knowledge and transformation and change. So they kind of go quite well together. The sage promises wisdom. So I always think of like Miyagi when I think of the sage. But basically it's sort of like, you know, saying that it's not just about acquiring knowledge, it's also about becoming wise and also potentially becoming a teacher as well. So for me, the sage is something that I do want to represent myself as because I want to help people become wiser about business. And therefore, I need to always make sure that I'm learning so that I can be wise, so that I can act like a sage. And that's sort of the story that I would tell about myself. And it just helps me understand how to represent myself to others. But also, again, the innocent is a great one because the innocent simplifies. So the innocent is sort of saying, like, we can learn, but we can learn in a way that doesn't need to be so overwhelming and so difficult. The innocent is sort of there to help simplify. Okay, and then we have to defend. So this is really more appealing to people who, like I said before, obviously we're talking about protection, we're talking about risk. There are three different types of archetypes in this as well. So we have the nurturer, and the nurturer is sort of like a parental figure. They promise recognition for the hard work that you've done. But the nurturer is also very protective. And so a brand like the Hyatt Hotel, they're a really good example of the nurturer. They help us to feel like we're going to be looked after no matter where we are in the world because they've got our back and they're going to recognize us as an important customer for their business. The creator promises authenticity. So a really good example of a creator brand is Apple. And actually what's really interesting about creator brands, they promise authenticity and they tend to have a very strong fan base. They tend to get like fans that are almost like borderline obsessive because they are so strong and steadfast in who they are and not sort of budging or compromising who they are in order to be authentic, that they tend to get a lot of respect from their fan base and they tend to have very loyal customers, which is always a nice thing. And then you have the ruler. So the ruler promises power. Now, a lot of sort of big brands will do this. And it sort of ties in with the hero as well. So triumph and power. And it does speak to acquisition as well. All of these cross over to a certain degree. But the ruler is really about being the king. It's about being the best. So they promise power, they promise status, they make people feel like if I'm part of this brand, then I can sort of like get these qualities as well. So they're the 12 archetypes. Obviously, like I said, I've gone through these very, very quickly. So definitely check out the resource below, sparkle.com. It's awesome. It has really, really helped me, and it will really help you to start fleshing out how you talk about your business in terms of these archetypes. So as I said, the other thing that's really important when we're talking about external steering is sort of looking at your competitors and looking at what your competitors are doing and what's working for them. So this Thursday, I'm going to be sharing with you a whiteboard session on how to conduct a competitor SWOT analysis. It's going to be quite a quick video. I'm aiming for about 5 minutes. And for those of you who haven't seen, I do whiteboard sessions from time to time. They're not me talking to you. It's just sort of a whiteboard session drawing out how these things work together. And that's, I think, the best way for me to explain how a SWOT analysis works. If this is the sort of thing that you want help with for your business, I definitely recommend checking that out. So once that's up, I will put a link here as well for you. Okay, so that was a lot to cover in one episode. So thank you for staying with me for those who did. And if you enjoyed this, please subscribe below. I would really appreciate it. I just have one more thing to say before I let you go, which is about tonight's question. So tonight's question is, what will you be using to help tell the story of your business? Will you be using the persona approach? Will you be using the empathy approach? Or will you be using the archetype approach? Maybe you'll be using a combination of two or three of those. And that's what I do as well. So I find, depending on the situation, I will have a preference for one or the other. Share your comments below. I would love to hear your thoughts on this. And if there's other things that you think have been really helpful, please feel free to share the links to those as well. I think the more that we can all share what we've learned with each other, the better. Have a great night, and I'll be back a little bit later this week to share that competitor SWOT analysis whiteboard session with you. All right, thanks guys. Have a great night.